Welcome to episode 6 of The Matchup, a storytelling podcast from St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where you, the listener, get to decide who told the most compelling story. I'm your host, Jason Franklin, and today it is my pleasure to welcome back the Reverend Nancy Vaders. She looks so excited to be here. Hi, Nancy.
Oh my gosh. Hi, Jason.
How are you?
This is my excited face.
Good. That's great. I'm sad that the listeners can see it. And for the first time, we have Dr. Mark Audrick Graves. Hello.
Hello.
Woohoo.
I am excited to be here.
Good. Look at that radio announcer voice.
Mark, why don't you tell the listeners what you do here at St. Paul's?
I direct the children's music programs. I am the director of the choristers and schola. We also have a choir for small children in kindergarten through second grade called the Novice Choir. And then our choristers begin in third grade and go all the way up through high school. And we have a group of adults that we call the Schola who sing with them. And we sing at the 9 o'clock Sunday Eucharist during the program year and have a blast with it.
And Nancy, you have a daughter or daughters in the choir?
Both daughters are in the choir. Yeah. Sophie's in third grade, so she's like a fresh chorister.
Yeah,
brand new. And then Audrey's in eighth grade and she's been doing it for a veteran,
like
a few years.
Putting the smack down with her choir.
That's what I'm gonna tell her.
Yeah.
You're gonna be like, do you know what choir at church is about? It's about putting the smack down. Yeah. And she's gonna be like, absolutely. She's here for that.
Nancy, do you have any advice for Mark since you're the veteran in the room?
No, I'm not going to give him any tips or tricks. I've already had to do this once with your wife.
I don't need your tips.
And she was a veteran, and I don't remember her giving me any tips. Right.
And I think that I should have mentioned that Dr. Mark is the husband of the Reverend Sarah Audrick Graves, who's already done 2, I think. Yeah.
Of course she has.
So
I know.
We'll see.
She's good, too.
Well, I'm sure.
I know.
So it's spooky season. It's October when this episode comes out.
Right.
And we are doing all kinds of kind of scary, creepy stories. Last week, we listened to the creepiest story from the Old Testament. So this week, we're going to talk about the creepiest story from the New Testament. Mark, which has more creepy stories, do you think, the Old or New Testament?
You know, I'm going to have to go with the Apocrypha.
Oh, interesting. Ooh,
but it's all about how you define creepy, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the one I'm about to lay out here from the New Testament is creepy on multiple levels.
Okay.
And so you've got kind of, you know, the supernatural-y kind of things going on. You know, there's lots of gore.
Yep.
And icky people doing icky things throughout the Old Testament. But, you know, the New Testament's got some weird, creepy stuff, too, that's, you know, a little bit, you know, it makes for good reading if you want to just curl up with a fun story.
Yeah.
So. To be fair, I think the entire Old Testament can be creepy.
There's lots of creepiness.
I mean, there's so much going on there. I'm voting Old Testament.
Okay. Would you have a hard time picking your story for today?
Yes and no. I had a hard time kind of, like, overthinking creepy.
Okay.
Like, what does that word mean to me?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to have a little story to tell, a little backstory to fill in about creepy.
All right.
Because creepy's not necessarily in your face.
Mm. It's true.
That's a very specific word.
Yeah. Creepy's a feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, in each episode, our two guests will present their case. We'll talk a little about it. And after the episode, you, the listener, gets to vote on who told the most compelling story. I am the only person who knows what story each person is going to tell until now. Nancy, are you ready to present your case for the creepiest story from the Old Testament?
New Testament. I was about to close my Bible and walk out of the room and be like, thank you so much for having me.
Your face was, my gosh.
Did you love that?
Yeah, it was so good.
I was like, what?
He did that on purpose.
I'm ready.
Okay,
New Testament, I'm ready.
It's a New Testament.
Okay. So, like I said, you said creepiest story from the New Testament. And I think that creepy is not necessarily violence in your face, like a bunch of gore. Like, there's horror, and there's scary, and then there's creepy.
Yeah.
So, when I think of creepy, I think that feeling that you get when something's not quite right. Like, when I worked in the hospital, there was this room in the ICU that we didn't say it was haunted, but there's something wrong with that room. nothing good ever happened in that room. Mm. And when you walked in that room, you just got this creepy as a vibe.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. So I'm gonna, like, kind of like, can I talk about Henry the Snake? Okay.
You may talk
Mark
about Henry
Mark and
Sarah the snake.
Have a snake that live in their pond that we've all named Henry. Mm-hmm. And oh, Henry. Henry is creepy. And here's why.
Yep.
Because when you see Henry, it's creepy. Yep. When you don't see Henry, it's creepy. Because where is he?
When yep. you wade into the middle of the pond to fix the fountain pump.
No.
And you think he's not there. You think he's been gone for a while, mm-mm. but then
2 days later,
he's there. That's retroactively creepy.
That's right. And it's kind of like the Blair Witch Project. Ooh, I'm dating myself, but do you remember when that came out?
Oh, yes.
It was the idea that these folks were being tormented and chased and stuck in the woods. And, you know, I remember getting sick watching that camera work,
yeah.
but it wasn't so in your face. It was just the idea that they can't get out of whatever situation they yeah. found themselves in. So I'm going to tell this story from my childhood to illustrate creepy, and then I'll get into the New Testament story. So I have two older brothers. They're 13 and 10 years older than me, and they love to torment me. I'm the only girl. And back in the 80s, this movie came out, Christine, an adaptation yeah. of Stephen King's book, Christine, about a killer 1957 Plymouth.
Yep.
And we didn't have a 1957 Plymouth, but my brother had this little red Fiat thing that kind of looked like Christine, had those big headlights or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we had a basement and the garage, you could see the car. If you were in the basement watching TV, you could see the car. So they took me down there one day. I'm like a child, okay? I'm not even like a preteen or I'm probably my youngest daughter's age. I'm probably like 8 to 9. And they're like, we want to watch this movie with you. And I'm like, oh, my brothers want to spend time with me. And so they sit me down and they show this movie, Christine. If you've never seen this movie, this is the premise or the book, is that this young man finds this old car and kind of becomes obsessed with it and fixes it up. And in turn, the car becomes obsessed with him. Mm. And anyone that gets in the way of their relationship is mowed down by this car. Which sounds crazy. And it is. But if you're 8 years old, this is a very scary concept because in the movie, they don't necessarily show all that gore or like the person physically getting hit all the time. It's the idea that when you hear that car crank up and the radio comes on by itself and no one's in it and the headlights come on and it turns, you know, like this person's going to die.
Yeah.
And they're going to get run over. And they don't necessarily show it. So my brothers made me watch that with this car right here in the basement kind of looking at me. Y'all, I never... And the creepiest thing about Christine is Christine will like hit someone and kill them, whoever it is. And she'll magically fix herself.
Mm.
So like her bumper pops back. So it looks like she's pristine. But anyway, I never, ever went in that basement again with that car parked there by myself because yeah. That event in my life established that place was creepy.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't go there. So that is kind of my understanding of creepy. And so on that note, my creepiest New Testament story is the beheading of John the Baptist.
Okay.
Or the decollation of John the Baptist, or my personal favorite, the beheading of the forerunner. Which is my personal favorite okay. description. And I think last Sunday, I bet you know this, was like when we recognized the beheading of John the Baptist in the church. I think it was September 11th, the feast of, I think. Quote me on that. People don't look it up.
Yeah. But it's sometime in the late summer. I know that.
Yeah.
Like we've just rounded the bend with that feast.
It was,
yeah.
It was close by.
Yeah.
So along the lines of creepy, all the gore, the actual beheading of John the Baptist, that is not elaborately described mm-hmm. in the book. You kind of think this happens off camera, so to speak. So let's just set up the story because it's creepy. So Herod is the ruler over Galilee, and he's like a skeezball type guy. And he really hates John the Baptist. It has nothing to do with what John the Baptist is saying about the coming of Jesus or baptism or anything theological. Why he hates John the Baptist is because John the Baptist, or JTB, as I'm going to refer to him, because it's a long thing to say. What he doesn't like about JTB is that he called him out for divorcing his first wife and being like, you know what? My brother's wife is hot. going for her. And just marries his brother, his sister-in-law,
yep.
Herodias, marries his wife. And so John's kind of like, yo, you cannot do this. Like, you know, this is creepy. I don't know if he said that, but, you know, can't do that. So John made it clear that, like, Herod's personal life is sketchy and that, you know, he's done something that he shouldn't have done. And so Herod is like, well, I can't kill him because he's kind of afraid. Like, John has this following and... Yeah. He's, you know, has this kind of prophecy about the Messiah and all this stuff. And he's like, well, I can't kill him because I'm too scared that people will revolt. And Herod doesn't like conflict, evidently. So he imprisons John the Baptist. So he hates John and he wants to kill him, but he's too afraid. He says, this is a quote from Matthew. He wanted to kill John, but he feared the crowd because they regarded him as a prophet. So Herod cares nothing about prophecy, theology, God. He only cares about himself,
yep.
and his opinion and people's opinion of him and his maintaining power. So, okay. He's got John in prison. That's good enough for him. He's probably like, eh, we're good. And so he decides to throw this big, extravagant party. Is it his birthday? I don't know. Whatever. Let's say it's his birthday. It's your birthday, Harry.
It's your story, Nancy.
All right. So you're supposed to correct me. I know.
Be prepared.
I know you know. Anyway, okay, so Herod throws this party, and of course, like, his new wife / sister-in-law, gross, is there. And it's this kind of, it's the party itself to me that is one of the creepiest things about the story, because you can tell from reading this that this is just all about consumption and excess and pleasure and just opulence. And so all these people are feasting and they're drunk, and you can just walk in there and feel like nothing good's going to come out of this. Like, everyone is just a sweaty, drunk, hot mess. And Herod's kind of presiding over this whole affair. And Herodias's daughter, Salome, comes in. And how old is this girl? Okay, because... in my mind, she's not that old. She's maybe like, I don't know. Let's just say she's from 11 to 14. And so Salome is dancing for everyone. Okay, that's creepy.
Yes.
And why is she dancing? I feel like the story, I'm like adding all these additions, but it's like, it's not a dance recital. She's not doing step toe in a tutu. Okay? I feel like I need to, I'm trying to keep this PG, but I feel like, this is like a sultry, weird, creepy dance that a girl probably shouldn't be doing and these days would not be appropriate. And yet, like, here she is. And so evidently, this not recital tutu dance that she's doing is really exciting Herod. Mm. This is also creepy. This is gross and creepy.
Super creepy.
Because this girl is his niece.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back in time. JTB was right. This whole situation is
wrong.
A familial situation is messed up. Okay. And maybe JTB, like, maybe he was like, this really doesn't have anything to do with God. This is just gross. I'm trying to tell you. Anyway, so she starts dancing. Everyone, remember, is like overfull with food and drunk and like throwing up in the corner like it's a bad frat party. And here comes Salome, and she's probably not drunk. She's probably just providing the entertainment. And Herod loves it. Whatever this girl is doing, he is into it. And that is creepy. And so he says, your dancing was so, it gave me so much pleasure, again, creepy, that you can have anything you want. I'll give you anything you want. And so I'm assuming Salome is like helicopter parented by Herodias, because she doesn't know what she wants. In the story, it says that she didn't know what to ask for. So she asked her mother. And so her mother, of course, also hates John the Baptist, because in calling out Herod's marriage to her, he's also calling her out.
Right.
And she is not as concerned as Herod is about killing John the Baptist. She knows that this is her only chance to have this guy killed, because Herod's not going to do it. He doesn't want the fallback from that. But they've already got him there. Everyone's in this drunken, consumed state of excess and pleasure. no one's going to say no to anything. So that is just the ultimate creepy setting. You are walking into a situation where anything is going to be accepted. And so she whispers in her daughter's ear, tell him that you want the head of John the Baptist. Whoa. This is not like, it's not a normal request. Nope. Okay. She could have had like
a pony.
She probably needed ponies. She needed to be in a room playing Barbies, but that's fine. She could have had anything.
Yeah.
And as you know, it's your mother giving you this request and you're like, okay, sure. And so she walks up to Herod and says, I would like the head of John the Baptist presented on a platter. So as if they are feasting on death and destruction. So the beheading, the actual gore itself happens off camera or off script, or you know, and I honestly think that's more creepy than any description that could have been included in the story itself, because you know that this man, this forerunner to Jesus, the man who baptized Jesus, is literally dying a violent death right behind the doors of this opulent excess party pleasure atmosphere. It's the creepiest kind of, and the party knows that it's happening and they're anticipating it. It's like they're excited. You can feel like this fervor and frenzy to like, yes, like, no, don't just kill this guy. Chop his head off and then bring it in here, because the table is set for this kind of just like awful, gory, excessive violence for power. And that is what makes it so creepy. So the head is brought in. There are so many, like, I know that nothing, no one can see anything. There's so many great artistic depictions of this. And like, there's a great Rubens one. And so if you know anything about Rubens, often his characters were like kind of, I don't want to say overweight, like thick, you know, they're thick. in just a pleasant, lovely way. Like they're Rubenesque. That's why that word exists. And so there's a great Rubens one where like someone is literally like stepping on the headless body of John the Baptist. And the women to the side are wearing these kind of like opulent Renaissance type clothing, because it's Rubens, and just gleeful over this excessive violence. So, you know, Google artistic depictions of John the Baptist, beheading of John the Baptist, and you'll see some great stuff. And of course in Matthew, like they add in like, oh, Herod was grieved at this request. Or please, yes, I'm calling it. Like, no way. Like this is the perfect excuse for him, because he's not doing it himself. Mm-hmm. He said you could have whatever you want. It's kind of a pilot thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, we'll just do whatever you want. It wasn't my decision. So I don't buy this. I don't know why that's in the Matthew. I don't know why that's in there, but I'm not buying it. I don't think Herod was grieved about anything. So, and let's not forget, off to the side here, poor Salome, like poor girl, is all she did was do a good thing and entertain, you know, her parents' uncle's stepdad's party. I don't know. See, this situation's messed up.
Yes.
I don't even know how to say it. All she did was try to please the party by being a great entertainer.
Yeah.
And no, she never would have asked for that. Her mother manipulated her into a situation that caused extensive violence. And she had to be a witness to all that. So let's not forget the trauma of this girl in a situation that truly she had. I think what bothers me is that she had the least amount of control of anyone in that room. And they took advantage of her to have this man killed.
Yeah.
And she had to bear witness to that and have a huge part to play in it. Mm-hmm. And so let's not forget that. So that whole story, all the ins and outs of that story, the setting, the ending, from beginning to end, to me, that is the creepiest story in the New Testament.
Well, that definitely feels creepy. I feel like you might need a shower, actually.
Yeah. Well, Nancy.
Whoa, there's a font outside.
Yeah.
What?
There's a font outside. You might need some.
Mark, any thoughts about Nancy's story and John the Baptist?
Well, I mean, you've set the bar pretty high.
Well,
I was gonna say, like, It's almost like something you would find in the Book of Judges.
Yeah.
You know, it's got that, just that murky, dark. I mean, there's archetypes.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's lots of these archetypes of characters going on, and I feel like Matthew's really playing on that.
Shout out to Meghan Markle's podcast, Archetypes.
So that's a hard act to follow. I'm gonna
all right
straight up. It's a hard act to follow.
It's great,
and yet I'm going to.
I'm ready. Right. I'm ready for it.
I do have to ask you though. What are your thoughts about Herbie the Love Bug? I mean, does it creep you out now? As a result,
pre-Christine, I thought it was the sweetest, cutest thing. Post my brother's traumatizing me. Any car with a large headlights, I just avoid on principle. Don't walk in front of them. If it has fins, don't walk in front of it.
But so let me just begin by saying your kind of definition of creepy, I'm jiving with.
Okay.
Like I had a similar entry point.
It's a vibe.
It is. It's a vibe.
Yep.
And it's also something that you're not always expecting. Speaking of archetypes, so my story takes what we assume of the archetypes and turns it on its head, which in of itself is creepy, because sometimes creepiness can also be someone that you think you know and even trust revealing another side of themselves that you're not sure you like. That can be creepy because it can set up a sense of distance, and you're questioning their decisions. And so my story has to do with the Apostle St. Paul.
Ooh.
And I can just say at the outset, you know, there are some people who the minute you say Paul, they're immediately
creepy,
hands down, you know, thumbs down. Yeah. Well, this is a different side of creepiness though. And I'm not a Paul hater. You know, I we are at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, and I love that St. Paul's our patron saint. Paul, there's so much richness and depth and poetry in so much of his writings. And Paul has done some things and written some things, different things for different people, but we all raise our eyebrows at. And so I've got a narrative story involving St. Paul from the Book of Acts.
Ooh.
But before I get into that, I do want to give some background that this particular story, I have discovered it's hard for me to read this narrative and imagine it without putting some autobiography into it.
Okay.
And the part of autobiography that I bring myself into this story is, some of you know, and many of you listeners may not know, that I spent a number of years as a child. I was a missionary kid. And so my middle school years, fifth grade through eighth grade, I lived in Latin America, most of that time in the Dominican Republic, also spent a year in Costa Rica. My parents were missionaries and not Episcopalians. And I know, someone in the Episcopal Church who didn't grow up in the Episcopal Church.
What?
Imagine that.
Me too.
But a lot of my formation, both as a person and as a person of faith, was in a sort of an evangelical revivalist tradition. And I attended lots of revivals, lots of preaching services, lots of long church in the Caribbean where it's hot and there's no air conditioning. And you yearn for an open window. So my story involves an open window.
Right.
This is Acts chapter 20. And a character by the name of Eutychus. And it's not a long, I thought I would just read it because it's not very long. This is Paul, it's chapter 20, so it's nearing the end of the narrative of Paul. It's his third missionary journey traveling around the Mediterranean. And if you've ever been to the Eastern Mediterranean, especially in the summertime, I can't read this without thinking about, it's really hot.
Mm.
On the first day of the week, by the way, they are in Troas, which is it's close to Istanbul. It's on the northwestern coast of Turkey, right on the Mediterranean. So in Troas, on the first day of the week, when we, and this is Luke now in the first person journeying along, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul talked with them, intending to depart on the morrow, and he prolonged his speech until midnight.
Oof.
There were many lights in the upper chamber where we were gathered, and a young man named Eutychus was sitting in the window. He sank into a deep sleep as Paul talked still longer, and being overcome by sleep, he fell down from the third story and was taken up dead.
Ooh.
But Paul went down and bent over him, and embracing him said, "Do not be alarmed, for his life is in him." And when Paul had gone up and had broken bread and eaten, he conversed with them a long while until daybreak, and so departed. And they took the lad away alive and were not a little comforted. So Paul's preaching.
A lot.
A lot. Midnight, what does it say? He kept preaching past midnight.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. It's like in the evening meal, you know, early church, Book of Acts, community meal and Eucharist. So they're worshiping. They're having church.
Yeah.
And Paul takes a notion. He's got a word. He wants to lift a text.
He doesn't know the 9 to 11 minute rule.
No, no, no. He does not know the 9 to 11 minute rule. He starts preaching and he preaches so long. And it's there were many lamps. There are crowded people in this room, the open window. It's hot. It's like sticky Mediterranean hot. And Eutychus is a youth. He's like the youth group there.
Of course.
Sitting in the weather, trying to stay cool. Paul preaches so long that Eutychus falls asleep and falls out the window and dies. To his credit, Paul does stop and run down, revive, bring him back to life. And a lot of scholars debate whether he actually died or not. It's three stories.
He died.
He died.
This is a zombie story.
This is, yeah. It could, it's a little zombie-ish, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Paul brings him back to life, says it's fine, he's alive, goes back upstairs and does what? Keeps preaching.
That's got to be the saddest part.
Again.
Because you know the people there listening are like, oh, good. Well, I mean, I'm sad he died.
This was a good conclusion. Okay, good. Good ending point.
They're packing up.
Yeah. Checking their messages.
It's like, you know, Rick Lisher, who was a preaching professor at Duke.
Yes.
Rick Lisher told the story of when he was growing up as a Lutheran boy in the Midwest. They would sit in the balcony along the front row, and there was the rail at the end of the balcony. And when the preacher was preaching, they all had a nickel. And the game was, you put your nickel down when you think it's the preacher's last sentence.
I love that game.
And whoever actually wins collects all the nickels.
We're going to start doing that.
Yeah. So imagine all the people in Troas with
lots
their nickels. Eutychus falls out the window and dies.
That's got to be the end.
Paul goes down to revive him. They're all putting their nickels down. But guess what? None of them won. Because Paul starts preaching again. And to me, so there's creepiness. There's a creepiness of like somebody dying in a sermon. I mean, many of us may have felt that way.
Yes.
Yes. I figuratively died.
Even creepier is Paul not reading the room.
Yeah.
Let's say it. He wasn't reading the room. He's like, I've got more to say. You know? And so I just, you know, like I said, bringing my own childhood experience, all these memories I have as a, you know, as a 12-year-old of the preacher holding his Bible up in one hand and just proclaiming forever and ever and ever in the other hand. And it's hot and it's sticky and you want to fall asleep. Not out of a window.
but
knowing the story, you're afraid. Well, if I do, it might not solve anything. And Paul's just going to get up and preach some more. Dusk till dawn.
Jeez.
Forget, you know, there may be some casualties. We may lose some people along the way, but I've got a word to bring.
Wow.
And nothing's going to get in the way of me bringing that word. Even a poor, you know, 14-year-old falling to his death.
Yeah.
Is not going to stop Paul from preaching.
Because they don't even really say what Paul's talking about.
Right? No, they don't say what he's talking about. It's just he's
talking too much.
He's talking too much. I mean,
the Bible is saying that. Basically.
Yeah. I mean, prolong his. Paul talks still longer. Like the story itself is saying that he was preaching a long time.
It's funny,
you know. You don't have the opulence and the gore and the overconsumption and heads on platters and sweaty people and inappropriate
relationships.
You don't have any of that. This is almost like mid-career Hitchcock. Like, this is like Rear Window.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like Rear Window Hitchcock. Like, it's people who, on the surface of the story, there aren't archetypes. There's no villains. These are all the people we're rooting for.
Yeah.
These are our heroes. These are the, you know. And yet, because of that, I think it's really kind of creepy. You know?
Am I right that it said that, like, he fell, died, Paul saved him.
Uh-huh.
Then he went back to talking, preaching. And then at the very end, doesn't say like they carried the lad away or something like that.
Yeah. And they took the lad away alive.
I mean, he didn't even get to leave after that.
No, I know. Was he just there?
You're right, Jason. It implies that he, like, all right, listen, he's got more. You better.
Paul probably repeated the part that he was saying when the guy was falling out of the window.
Give everyone like looking at the poor guy.
Here's what you missed. Just let me back up a little bit because you know he missed a little bit.
Exactly. Let me say it again. Some of you weren't all paying attention.
I'm just excited to be able to use a word that I learned in high school from Martha Higginbotham. Shout out, Miss defenestrate.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
A biblical defenestration.
Yes. It is a biblical defenestrate, which means does defenestrate mean it means to fall out of a window, but also like
make someone go out of a window.
Or yourself, right?
Self-defenestration.
Oh, you could defenestrate yourself if you just jumped.
Yeah.
Okay, but defenestrate is falling out of a window.
We have a biblical defenestration, and that's heavy.
I didn't think that I was going to use that word going into this podcast, but I'm really excited.
Can you imagine being like that congregation and knowing that that poor kid is like sitting next to you? Like,
I know.
Back from the dead.
Yeah, you're so like, zombie, okay? Little zombie. Yeah. You know.
Hey, you okay?
You right, buddy?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sure he's going to wrap it up soon.
I know a lot of clergy types. I feel like I can insult clergy types since I am one who can't read a room and just keep talking. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Well,
it's creepy.
It's creepy. And I have to say, you know, there was a time... And I'm the only participant this season in this podcast who is not an active preacher job. But I will say...
You don't get extra points for that.
Once upon a time...
You had Rick Lisher. You know what's what.
I did. I was, full disclosure, once upon a time, I was licensed as a lay preacher in this and another diocese. I let my lay preaching license expire. And
there's a license for that?
There is a license to kill.
Yeah. Well, apparently, according to Acts chapter 20, it is.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
And so I, and yet... I do, you know, my sermons come in the form of choir anthems.
Yeah.
Which are never that long. But, you know, the struggle is real. Like, sometimes sermons can go... It's almost like the book of Acts, Luke, the evangelist, is saying to us, you can preach for too long.
Yeah, exactly.
Amen.
Creepy things can happen if you don't stop.
Wow, that was great. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Nancy, anything to add? Who has the creepiest story?
I mean, obviously me. Okay, I gave you a head.
Yeah, but you're overtly creepy.
Oh, can I add this weird? Okay, I know. I mean, I live in the world of creepy. I love creepy things. Yeah. I have a black cat. Like, I'm embracing all of this. But, okay, so this is just this weird aside. Can I add this?
Yes, you can.
So where's the John the Baptist's head? Where is it? Well, evidently, it's in five different places. Because the Catholic Church says they have the skull of John the Baptist on display at the Basilica of St. Sylvester in Rome. Okay.
Okay.
Is that Sylvester the cat?
Yes. And then in medieval times... People thought the Knights Templar had it. Like, what's his name? It's a Dan Brown novel. And then the Islamic tradition says the head is actually at the Umayyad Mosque in Damascus in Syria, which was formerly the Basilica of John the Baptist. And side note, the Pope has visited this place.
Oh, interesting.
And so they say they have it. And then the French say...
Oh, the French have to get involved.
The French are like, it's in the Eiffel Tower. The French claim that... It's in a 13th century cathedral built specifically to house his head.
Oh.
So, I mean, kind of embarrassing if you don't have the actual head. Or they went to TJ Maxx and they were like, look at this skull!
They just got excited because it involved platters and banquets.
That's honest. That's true. There's like, it's a skull with a baguette.
I've seen that painting too.
That's right. And then, finally, there's a museum in Munich, Germany. This history museum that claims they have the head,
wow,
along with another, you know, like a finger and some other relics, which also gross.
Okay.
So Where's the head? Where is the head?
That is a good question.
That is a good question. Well, I can't top that. But I mean, Eutychus, and I also can't send you. He kept his head.
He kept his head.
Paul gave it back to him and said, "You'll need this. Listen, the next paragraph is for you."
That's right.
I don't know of any depictions in art of Eutychus other than I close my eyes and I think of artistic renditions of Eutychus, and you know what I see is the like circa 1970 colored pencil drawing from your NIV children's Bible.
Yeah.
Like that.
Is he falling in the drawing? Like
he's like dozing with his eyes closed, and about it's the pre-fall. But you can see.
I mean, it's for kids.
It's for
kids. You don't really want to show.
Yeah.
Because that would be creepy.
Yeah. Well, see, there you go. Because it is a what? Creepy.
It is.
Story.
It's a vibe, man.
And it's the subtly creepy.
Yeah.
You know, it's Paul as, you know, anti-hero. It's. Yeah.
Interesting. That's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, sorry, I'm envisioning like the parishioners. Like he couldn't have been the only one sleeping at the time of the incident.
You know, he was not the only one who fell asleep. He just happened to be in the window.
Right.
Well, the cases have been presented for the creepiest story from the New Testament. And now the power is in your hands, listeners. In the episode description and notes is a link to a poll. Let us know what you think and let us know who told the best story. We'll continue with our spooky themes throughout the month, and I think you really will enjoy the next two episodes. Please like and subscribe if you want to hear more. You can learn more on our webpage, thematchuppodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at thematchuppod. Also, make sure and join our Facebook group, The Matchup Podcast, for extra information about the show. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you,
Mark.
You are welcome.
And thank you, everyone, for listening and voting. See you next time.